Is this on?
Yes. I'm Josh Sinangelo. I'm the technical director at Stimulant. We're based in Seattle and San Francisco, focused on natural user interface, and we've been working with Surface since 2004, since before it even came out.
I'm Nicolas Calvi. I'm a French MVP. I work for Winwise, a French company. I'm a technical director, such as, and I in the intro user interface experience.
My name is Dennis Vroegop. For the non-Dutch speakers out there, don't try to pronounce it. Just call me Dennis. It's much easier, I think. I've been working with Surface since version 1 in 2007, I think, and have been a lot of fun doing it. So I hope we can get you as excited about it as I am.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Rudin from a company called N-Squared, based out of Australia. Been working with Surface since 2007, prior to the release of V1, and been doing a whole bunch of different GUI type interfaces on Surface and different touch screens over the last 3 years.
Hey, I'm Rick Barraza. I don't have a cool accent. But I'm the creative director at Synergy. Primarily, we bring great design to business, but I have a lot of opportunities and privileges running up the R&D part of that with Synergy Labs. So we've been spending quite a bit of time with NUI and thought control interfaces and gestural and touch like that as well.
Okay, if you're looking for a cool accent, here's one. My name is Bart Roosnaal from Seven Steps, and we're working on all kinds of products for Surface. Shrink wrap products that you can buy online pretty soon. Okay.
And I'm Joshua Blake, and I'm the technical director of the InfoStrat Advanced Technology Group, and we focus on mainly public sector natural user interfaces, applying them to real problems. And I've been doing this with Surface since before V1 came out, and also have expanded to Connect. I actually founded the Open Connect community. So that's me. So to start things off, I wanted to ask the audience, how many of you guys feel that you use natural user interfaces today in everyday life? So quite a bit of you. So that's good. In reality, most of us, depending upon your definition of NUI, use NUIs every day, and it's so, you know, to start out with, I think we would talk about what is NUI, and I'll just put something out there, and then we can go from there. So I contend that NUI is an interface that is designed to reuse existing skills for interacting directly with content. So if you take the things that you already know how to do, because you're human and interact and learn how to use your environment, and you apply those skills to an interface, then it can be very easy to use and very intuitive as well. So, Dr. Neil, what do you think?
It's kind of interesting question, what is NUI, when the session is, you know, about NUI. You'd think everyone would come knowing what NUI is, but clearly it's not well defined. In fact, I think it's probably one of the more overloaded terms that we have right now in terms of the fact that it meant something very different, I think, 2-3 years ago, even to what it means now, and people are adopting the term of NUI to different things. Now, I went to a presentation by a guy called August de la Roy a few years ago. He used to work in the Surface team, and he told us that NUI really consisted of five things, and he compared them to where we had come from with a GUI interface. If you think of a graphical user interface, it has certain constructs to it that make it a GUI. You know, things like windows and menus and pointers, icons. So can we take that and learn from it and create something that is a set of constructs for NUI? And the five things that he pointed out were contextual environments, so being aware of your environment and being aware of the context of which you're working. What else did he say? Scaffolding, which is about learning as you go, so building up the knowledge of the user as you go through the use of that technology. Direct manipulation, which is really what Josh hinted at in terms of touching the content rather than touching something else that affects the content. Performance aesthetics, which is really about the fun of doing something rather than being boring. I mean, nobody walks away from using Word or Excel going, oh, that was such a fantastic experience. I love it. I can't wait to do it again. And yet with a new experience, that's what we're aiming for. We should be aiming for an experience where people are like, oh, that was so cool. I really want to do that again. And the final one is really around the realism that we put there and extending the real world into a super real world. So creating a realistic environment where you can do super real things. And I think to me, those 5 points have really stuck as the foundation to Nui.
Rick?
One of the things that I take away from your example of comparing Word to using a Nui is, in my mind, everything that a programmer does with Word is predefined. You can do in a test lab, and you can define a user scenario. A user wants to select some text and make it bold. A difference to Nui is that a lot of things you can't predict. You don't know beforehand what a user is doing. Still, the software has to react to it, and you have to sense some of the things that a user is going to do and have to respond to that and ultra quick. One of the most important things is that whatever you do to the software or whatever you're manipulating, the reaction of the software must be instant. And that's something that, well, we all know Word isn't very good at, or at least wasn't very good at a couple of years ago. And I think that's very essential for software and other things that involves Nui. It has to have ultra high performance compared to other things that we are used to in the desktop. What do you think?
So I think I take a kind of more pragmatic approach, and I do really appreciate the academic answers, excuse me, and everything, but it's a hard question to answer. I think you have a book coming out, or is it already out? Where the first chapter, I think, it's spent completely on that, right? Is your book out already? I know I have early access to it. But
I'm finishing up the last couple chapters, and I think the holdup is Luis.
Okay.
So as soon as that's out, then my book will be ready.
Okay. Well, I've really enjoyed what I've read so far, but
I'm actually going to give out free vouchers for the book at the end to first three questions and answers.
So when we get and we hit chapters like that, or we do research, it can get very academic and very kind of debating on it. As the principal experience architect, my experience was usually about creating these experiences where people get to touch the future. So for me, I don't use the word Nui a lot, but we do focus a lot on these kind of like immersive experiences for emerging technologies, right? And it covers a lot of that. So I might be a little blurry in my definition, but this aspect of kind of using Dr. K's comment that the future is anything created after you were born, right? I mean, technology is anything created after you were born. Because my daughter, when she's 2 years old and she's doing multi-touch, right, and my son is walking up and they're touching a screen, if that screen doesn't respond, the screen's broken. Like that's her reality already, right? That's the world she lives in. So this concept of command line to GUI, you know, NUI is one of those transitional terms as we're moving into that. So I think a lot of it has to do with devices now, and to me that's the biggest thing. We've been stuck in this mouse as your proxy of intent, and now devices and sensors are opening up this whole world where the computer can start seeing you, guessing at you, vision systems are calculating your touch, right? There's this influence. We have audio technologies, you know, impulse technologies, motion sensors. And I really think Nui and this explosion of sensors is really what frames the conversation. I hate to be too designery in my answer, but I kind of go big picture down in terms of what the feeling is. So
that's a good point, and brings us to another aspect of this whole field. We really depend upon the devices and the inputs and outputs. So Bart, maybe you have some comments on that.
Yeah, I think that's very important. And one of the things that is important for the breakthrough of Nui is that it's becoming a commodity. Like touchscreens are now, well, available for a couple hundred dollars, and you have a high-end touchscreen. I think if you can scale the devices and the sensors down and make them very cheap, it can really change the way that we're interacting with software and hardware. It's not surprising that we have some little devices with sensors available here, because we're kind of leading up to that. Josh is now setting up a little demo that's using little devices with sensors in it. It's a set of the Siftio cubes. Is that right, Siftio?
Siftio.
Siftio, okay. So maybe you want to show something on that.
Yeah, can you hit the button 3? On the bottom. On the bottom. All right. So talking about devices and inputs and outputs, I have access to, I got early access to these cubes. And these are little devices. They're embedded, and they communicate wirelessly to a host computer. And they're interesting because they have a couple different sensors in them. They can tell when they are adjacent to another cube, and they can also tell the tilts. And they also have a button, and they can tell when you're shaking it. So I wanted to take a look at what happens when we combine these kind of devices with Surface. So I built a little application, and it might be a little bit hard to see, but basically, yeah, it's hard to see on there. Each of these has a different task name on them. So the activity that I'm demonstrating is assigning people to different tasks. And this might be something we do in a collaborative environment. So here's all the MVPs. And I can, let's see, he disappeared. So now his face is on there. This is the prototype unit, so.
So, Josh, the pictures are actually showing up on the cubes themselves, right?
So now we have our faces on the cubes, and something interesting we can do with this, I mentioned that we can detect the tilt. So I was thinking about how can we use the sensors and the proximity sensors. So say I want to assign this guy to a different task.
Thank you.
And thanks. We can combine a group of these guys. So now we have three people assigned to this task. And I can put this back down. And we can rearrange it and go back to arranging other tasks. So that's just a little demo of what you could do now that we have more and more devices with different types of interfaces, sensors, and inputs and outputs. We have a lot richer interaction. And so there's more possibilities about what we can do when we interact with computers with a NUI.
So Josh, one of the things as you're demoing, like we're noticing in this type of environment, we don't all have these massive stage lights, right, in areas. So the fidelity of the sensors in general, right, on Surface One, on tablets, on all these other NUI devices, it seems like there's a large range of fidelity within how sensitive the sensors are for each one of these devices. I know as the designer, that's been one of the challenges for me because it's kind of hard. You have to work on this thing, and technology keeps getting better and better, but sometimes the sensors are very coarse, and you have to adjust to that with design, right? How do you guys feel about the integrity of sensors in NUI in general?
Or, I think, Josh.
I'd like them to get better, of course. And cheaper and smaller. And I'd like them to be more ubiquitous. And that's all changing very slowly. But for now, we have great toys to play with, like Kinect and Siftio. And they're enabling some really cool prototypes. And I think it's this group up here and this group out here that are going to turn those into real-world, bulletproof sort of applications. And hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I want to go back to the first point. What is a natural user interface? And I think that one important aspect that a lot of people misunderstand is the word natural in there. And natural doesn't mean it mimics the nature. Natural means that people should feel a natural when you're working with it. So there's a slow, not steep learning curve. People feel unnatural using these kind of interfaces. And people are social animals. And the thing we love to do most is get together, like on a stage like we do right now, and talk amongst each other. And all these devices are pretty nifty and pretty cool, but these Siftio cubes, I really want to have them, but they're just for me. They are one person kind of devices. Now, if we look at surveys, it's very cool technology, but it enables people to work together. It's a social device. A lot of people ask me, well, what's the biggest advantage of surveys? Well, say it's a table. The name implies it. It's a surface. People sit at the table to do work together. And the technology is impressive, of course it is, but that's not what it's all about. It's a social experience. So a natural user interface should really support that kind of interaction that people have when they sit together at a table. So I think that's a very important part. So.
Yeah, and I think it's important to differentiate that surface doesn't necessarily mean GUI, and GUI doesn't necessarily mean surface. You know, people say, oh, I'm building a GUI, and you say, what are you doing? And you find out they're actually building a GUI on surface. So it's important to understand that it's about the interface as well as the device. It's the combination of software and hardware that really puts these things together to create that GUI experience.
But on that topic of social, though, I think that's a really great point to be bringing in, right? Because, and it was there on Surface 1, right? But the form factor now is getting smaller. There's more leg room underneath, and the way it can be flat or go vertical, right? I mean, all of these industrial design enhancements that they've been bringing in Surface 2 are bringing greater affordance to that, getting people around the table and having that natural experience where you put a cup down, you know, and the table responds, that you're throwing things, that you're pushing things back and forth to each other, that it feels much more a natural part of the flow of people, a user-focused problem-solving, right? That's great design. As opposed to we're all sitting at a big computer that's looking up at us, right?
So I know that Josh has been working on a lot of applications that really show off the social and multi-user aspects. You know, maybe you want to show off one?
I would love to show off one. You want to come help? Reset this. So we've been working on some fun apps. The one I'm going to show you is called Social Stream. And this pulls down content from Twitter, Flickr, and RSS feeds about whatever topic it's kind of configured to. No, that's fine.
There you go.
And one thing is it doesn't have any particular orientation, so if we all wanted to get around here and use it at once, we could do that, except for Luis would get very angry. So the two of us can sit here and pull out, like, oh, here's some tweet about Mix, and we can either not know each other and have separate experiences or, you know, collaborate and pass this cool thing over to him to see it. Not seeing the photo that I took of the crowd here coming up, unfortunately. And this sort of multi-user experience is not something you can really do with other products. There's nothing that's as big and as robust and as, frankly, awesome-looking as Surface.
Josh, how many touch points does that actually support? Because a lot of people don't realize that.
Over 50 is what we're saying, so which is really more than you need. Five people with all 10 fingers down would be kind of impractical most of the time. So it's enough for anything, whereas, you know, the standard touch screens that you're able to get in a laptop now is usually two, which definitely isn't a multi-user experience.
So, you know, we were talking about that Surface is kind of a premium GUI experience. It's really the best of the devices available today. So, you know, I wanted to pose a question. What are the applications? Where does it really do well? You know, is it just something for digital signage and marketing, or is Surface something bigger?
I think that's an interesting question because Surface can be used for lots of different purposes. And, you know, I guess as Surface MVPs, maybe we're a little religious about what we think Surface should be used for, and we talk about it being as a table and not as a kiosk. But the reality is that if people find business uses for a screen that has a vision system in, then go for it, you know. I don't think that we should be restrictive. I do think that there are some pillars that I've talked about before in terms of what makes a good Surface application. So, you know, a good Surface application, like Dennis says, is social, but as Rick said, it's seamless as well. So there's seamless interaction between, you know, the real world and the virtual world. And that definitely enhances a surface experience. And then I think the third pillar is spatial, the ability for the application to work wherever you are around the table, the ability to stand at any position at the table and use it, and also the ability to have some kind of sense of where you are, where is the user coming from. So having a concept of knowing that the user is from one side of the table and then orientating content to that user, I think that's important to creating good social, good surface experience.
Yeah, I think the things that really stand out to me for quality surface experience in these types of moving forward, what Josh showed right there with the 360 interface, where a lot of people come in from multiple sides, right? It is natural, it's easy to use, massive multi-touch. I think these are the things that why I was drawn to the Surface a couple years ago. And full disclosure, for the past couple years, I've had the ability to be showing at South by Southwest different Surface experiences. And even on Surface 1, I mean, a lot of people make the mistake of saying it's a big tablet, right? It's a big iPhone. But the vision system in it is a big differentiator. And I think a lot of times the problem is that our designers, maybe it's not designers, whoever is architecting the solution, whoever it is, I think they're dealing with these newy hardware that we're at this point where the hardware supports paradigms that we're not used to problem solving for. So even with Surface 1, you could be putting massive multi-touch, but a lot of people weren't taking advantage of it. You know, this ability of putting objects and bite recognition and vision recognition and flowing it out, all this was available 3 years ago. Surface 2, it's just getting better, but I think a big challenge between getting these great newy experiences isn't the hardware right now. It's actually our ability to problem solve in a GUI world does not port seamlessly into a newy world, and it requires a new change of thinking about these things. And that's really when you can tell these great experiences, you know that there's designers and architects and the developers who are thinking in a different way. They're not just transposing mouse clicks to touch clicks. They're thinking massive multi-user. They're thinking physics. They're thinking gestures and objects, vision, little AI. And these are the things that I think are really exploding these very magical experiences that we're starting to see. And I think we're all very privileged to be working on those things.
I got a pretty good example of this. I'm currently working on a project for kids who have Asperger's syndrome, autism. And when these kids are being diagnosed, it's very hard to diagnose these kind of people because you don't interact with these kids. They are very close in their own world and you don't know what's going on. So right now the way that they do it is they have a doctor there in the room looking at the kid and making notes. And while he's making notes on a piece of paper, he doesn't interact with the kid, so it doesn't really work out. And we asked him, why don't you use a computer? Well, they said, if we sit behind the computer, there's a physical barrier between me and the children we are testing right now at this moment. So we're building a service application right now where the kid can do tasks on the machine, but it doesn't feel like working with a computer. He's just playing along. But everything that the kid does is being measured and being monitored and being stored in a system. And the physician in the room just has to look at the kid and talk to the kid, and he doesn't have to take notes. And for the children, this feels very natural because this is what they do all day long. I mean, they do the same kind of thing at home right now. So it's a very social thing, and they know how to draw pictures and how to perform certain tasks, like guessing where something is hidden in a room, things like that. So the social aspect here is what makes it possible for us to get the diagnostic time down from about 7 weeks back to 1 day. So I think that's a pretty big improvement. So we can help a lot of more people that way just by using a social environment like this.
Expand on what you said about designing NUIs for learning disabled and people with autism. We recently deployed, actually it was last year, a set of applications to the Smithsonian Museum. And when we were beta testing this, we actually opened it up to the public. This is in the castle in the Smithsonian in DC. And we had all kinds of kids that, you know, ranging from, you know, one or two all the way to, you know, teenagers and some adults. But it was interesting to watch how they interacted. And there was one particular kid who, you know, he came in with his mother, and he had, you know, at first was kind of staying behind and just watching everyone else, and you could tell he was kind of, you know, introverted. And you know, once he figured out that he could come up and touch and interact with the surface and do the different activities, you know, he started interacting with the other kids, And we were watching, from afar, and we were watching his mother just light up. She had a big grin all the way across her face. And so we went and she came to us, and she said that this is the most social interaction he's done. And he had autism, or has autism, and it's very hard for autistic children to learn to interact with other people. So by designing a NUI in a way that it's accessible to more people, and not just Surface, but any kind of NUI, it's you can open up these kind of interactions, activities, to many more people that weren't able to do this. And this is kind of the same path that we've been on for a long time in the computing industry, when we have command line, only a couple wizards were able to really make use of it. GUI makes it more easy for business users and everyday users. But how do we go from 1 billion or 2 billion computer users to 6 billion and 7 billion? And I think NUI is a big part of that.
Yeah, I got a similar experience. I was in Seattle a couple of years ago and had one of the earliest units there in a hotel. And there were two elderly ladies. I think they were about 75 years old or something like that. And they were playing around with it. They were playing with a map application to look where the nearest museums and nearest restaurants were. And they were very delighted. And they had a lot of fun doing this. And I stood there watching them for a while. And all of a sudden, one of the ladies said to the other one, "Look, Annie, I'm finally using a computer." We're talking about people who are in the Western part of the world, and they have been around computers for a very long time, but they never used it. And this enabled them to do something and to get a task accomplished. So this was really an eye-opener for me. So look, Annie, I'll never forget that one.
Just picking up on a point that Josh made, that NUI certainly will help to extend the reach of some computing technologies, I don't for a minute think that GUI is going to go away. I think GUI has a strong place, and GUI is really the foundation for, I mean, people say, graphical user interface. It's really a great user interface. If it wasn't for GUI, we wouldn't have as many computers in the world as we have right now, and I think that will continue to happen. GUI is a very exploratory, provides a very exploratory, but also a very directed interface, as Rick mentioned, and I think that's important to remember. We're not moving from a GUI world to a NUI world. We're moving into a world where there's going to be both. In the same way that, to some degree, I think there'll be more GUI than there is command line, but to some degree we still have command line and some people still use it every day. So,
well, I think that aspect of the future, right, and kind of keeping the conversation moving forward, that element that we're touching on is this aspect of what are these changes in NUI? Because right now, NUI has often been just considered multi-touch, right, in some way. But we're getting into these things like Connect. I think we have a demo coming up, right, on that. And to me, that's where it's really exciting. This aspect, my dad, right? He's 80-something years old, and he showed up at my house, and we had the Connect. And he goes off and he plays his very first video game. And it's a bowling game. And he would never play a video game before that. It's always been, our computers, But he stands up and we talk him into it. And he's standing there and he rolls and he gets a strike. And my five-year-old goes crazy. And it was just really neat for me that being someone, the black sheep in the family who's into technology, and using all this complexity, it's now getting to a point it's getting easier and easier. And now my father, who's not comfortable with GUI interfaces, would never have been able to access that level. Now with the Connect, is actually bowling, and beating us with strikes, and him seeing this joy of interacting in this digital medium for the very first time, because the problem gets harder and harder and harder until it's solved, and then it allows things to be elegant, right? So I think the future is very bright in that way. Are you guys setting up the cool demo? Well, they're all cool. But,
So we have actually a pair of demos. It's performing the same activity. We have a quadcopter over there, an AR drone.
Okay. It's an AR drone. It's a helicopter. It's remote. You can control it remotely. There are a couple of applications that you can use to control it. We've created one that's using Surface to control it, to fly it. And we have another one using Connect. And you can tell from the two demos that They're both doing the same. They're flying the drone. But one will be more suited to a person that is using an interactive table and sitting remotely from the drone and trying to steer it. And the other demo is more suitable for somebody that is used to marshaling helicopters. So that application is more suitable for someone that is used to that kind of interface. So maybe Nicola? So Nicola will show off the service version, and we're actually using this on Windows 7 touchscreen. It's the same software as that you would use on service. What we've done here, we've connected the computer via Wi-Fi to the drone, and it's waiting for Nicola to come up with the special buttons to start it, hopefully.
You were able to leverage more code because of how you can code for Surface 2, right, and WPF on that application?
I don't know. So the question was, can we do more on Surface with this particular application compared to Windows 7 Touch? I'm not quite sure. It's Nicholas' software, but we could add additional capabilities to the software if you're running it on Surface compared to Windows 7 Touch.
So we're actually showing the Surface input simulator here, which so we're kind of a couple birds with one stone. But
yes, good.
You have to change the value, maybe?
It's any technique. It's an emergency.
Yeah, let's
Good, it was working a couple of minutes ago. Just a notice for the people in front, the drone will start flying, and especially in my demo, it might crash. So please be aware if you're worried about that. Like the lady is. Move to the back.
I think our external monitor settings just tricked us up a little bit.
Yes,
okay. Here we go.
Okay.
That's not a touch screen. I killed that, so just use the input. It's all right.
Here we go. So this will be the, hopefully, this drone flying in the dark.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Here we go. So what you're seeing in the screen is the output of a little camera that's in the drone. It actually has two cameras, one in front and one at the bottom. And when Nicholas is ready starting Notepad, he will actually fly the drone.
He'll just wait for us.
Okay, here we go. Okay. So using a virtual joystick controller, you can move the drone around, you can move it up, you can move it down, you can rotate it.
Translate a little bit.
So if you would be a person that's used to using a joystick or some other simulator or controller, hardware controller, this would be a very good natural user interface for you to fly the drone. So maybe if you can touch down softly, please. Okay, there you go. So that's flying the drone from service.
So now Bart is going to set up for his Kinect version of the same thing.
I walked in at about 10:30 this morning, and Nicholas had the application that he wrote on Surface using the Surface 2 SDK, but it didn't actually work because this is a prototype hardware and there were bits and problems, issues that we had. So Nicholas was sitting there with his laptop open and actually making his three lines of code change, and no code, just a recompile, recompile, no code change, brilliant, and now it works on Windows 7 Touch.
And contrast that with the Surface 1 development environment. I think personally that was one of the things I was most excited with Surface 2 is how you're able to code for it now is tremendously easier, and you can leverage it. You can leverage portions of it, obviously, right? Portions of it you can leverage it on typical Windows 7 Touch using that using those APIs and everything. I mean, it's much easier to do that, these types of things. So that code reuse is amazing.
So here we have our very sophisticated user interface for the Kinect version of the drone flying.
It's okay.
This is completely in the dark.
You could do it in the dark.
Do you have output on your screen? Because I don't really need output. Okay. Just another warning, I can't see the drone, so this is all guessing where it's going. So I'm standing here like an idiot to have the Kinect recognize me. I really can't see it. Okay, there we go. So
I can see it.
Oh. Let's do an emergency landing. Okay. I warned you about that.
The red is representative of the results of the flight.
Minority Report meets Terminator Salvation.
So
now we're back in back in Kansas.
Just to add to the fun, we'll be giving away this drone at the end of the session. So keep your eyes open.
This is worth several hundred dollars, so that's significant. So we just saw the same thing, piloting the drone in two different, very different interfaces, different styles of interaction, and this speaks to how a single interface may not be the end-all be-all for all situations. It really depends upon the specific users and their experience, the task that you're doing, the devices and sensors that you have available, as well as the environment context. So, piloting, bringing a helicopter into landing in the real world using a touch interface, back at a terminal may not work as well as using hand motions and gestures.
I think, and someone had made this point earlier, right, because we're starting to talk about this future of NUI, and one of these impressive things is the Kinect was, $150, right? And the AR drone, while being on the higher end for a toy, is $300 American?
$300,
yeah. So, and yet a couple years ago, this type of camera would be $2,000, right? Those types of remote controls with just the ability to shoot the video back in. So these sensors going down, getting smaller and smaller, the price points entering into the consumer market, even consumer accessible, I think that's really showing where NUI is heading. We're in this radical acceleration of technology and price points dropping down. Don't you also have a Kinect demo that's showing? Are we talking about the future of NUI? Or?
Yeah, so I don't need that. Let me pull that up here. Something a little bit funky with the output sometimes. But let's switch that over. So I mentioned that one of the things that we do is look at how we can use these kind of interfaces in a real-world production kind of context. And so this is an application that we had originally written for a federal client that tracks different pieces of information around the country. And this is all sanitized and generic. Let's see, am I in the frame right? So it was originally written as a touch application. And I have a framework called Infrastrat Motion FX that lets you add a couple lines of code to your WPF touch application, and now you can interact with it using motion tracking. So this application is written using WPF 4 Touch and Surface SDK. And we can now also, with Motion FX, which is an open source project, interact with it on with our hands. And so this enables a couple new scenarios that didn't make sense before. Imagine that this is displayed in a large display in a war room, and instead of, you know, if we're trying to figure out what's going on with these performance indicators, instead of interrupting our discussion looking at the display by going to a terminal with a keyboard or mouse, or by, you know, even going up to a touchscreen, even though the touchscreen would make sense in certain scenarios, in this scenario, it might make more sense for us to stand back at a comfortable distance, be able to talk face-to-face and collaborate, and if we need more information about a particular element, we just ask it to give some more information. So this shows some of the history of the performance of this particular region. So this is, and I'm not saying that this specific thing is the future of NUI, but you know, we're starting to get a glimpse into what's possible, and you know, pretty soon we're going to be able to create interfaces that work across multiple devices and with multiple types of interfaces. So I didn't quite get it complete for here, but something that I almost have done is being able to take content from a horizontal like surface and pick it up and throw it up onto the wall, or take it from one wall display to another down to surface, or throw it onto a mobile device or a slate. So you know, once we kind of reach critical mass of the different sensors and devices and capabilities, there's a lot of really cool things that can happen. And we've seen it in the movies, so everyone's going to say Minority Report. But
I think what's interesting about the Kinect demos and relating it back to some of the things we talked about with NUI, if you think we talked about direct manipulation and natural interfaces, things that you naturally do in the real world, and you know, stretching and growing things and touching things is something you naturally do. But in the real world, I can't move that bottle of water just by moving my hand. So that's not really No, you can? Okay. So it's not natural, but it is super real, and it is direct manipulation. And so I think NUI has some constructs that we can identify already that you don't have to use all of them within an interface to create a great, delightful interface. But you know, in some contexts, maybe surface is one of those that if you use more, it gets better. And within other contexts, like Kinect, maybe you take the pieces that make sense within a NUI, the direct manipulation pieces, and work with those.
One thing on the future, if that's our topic now, right, what the future of NUI is, we've been very focused on touch and vision as two of our senses. And even with Kinect that's coming in, where now the computer's seeing you, right? But as we're talking about natural user interfaces, we are already seeing applications on these smartphones where it's audio immersion, right? I mean, you see clothing, you see... So this world of sensors is a lot more, and natural user interfaces is a lot more than just a vision game and a fingers game. I mean, you have all your senses. You have people mapping cameras onto people's tongues who are blind, and the tongue, the neuroelasticity of the brain to rewire senses based on the inputs that we can have. We really are moving into this brave new world, and so it's a lot more than just multi-touch, than just little AI vision when you're talking about NUI and when you're talking about what's coming up. There are radical changes on the horizon, and I think as designers or developers, it's really exciting. You just need to be reading so much because it's an avalanche of coming. We're moving into this post-Web 2.0 world, right? And it's going to be one driven by sensors, driven by devices, driven by smart spaces that see you and respond to you just as you see and respond to them, but with all your senses as well.
And another thing that I think is very important to revolutionize the way that we're handling things is that the way that touchscreens have become a commodity-like apparatus, the same is happening now for software. If you see an initiative like Josh's bringing out the new interfaces for Kinect into the general public, any developer can pick that up and create an application just like we did. It's much more available to a lot more people. And I think that's very essential for NUI to break through and to come up with new ideas. I don't know who mentioned the Minority Report, but a couple of things that you see here were done 20 years ago in the movie world, and it's now coming to our world. We can do that as a developer. We can buy a machine with a couple of $1,000s and do amazing stuff like that. And I think that's very important, that the future that we saw a couple of decades ago is coming to our time frame now.
So we have about 10 minutes left. We're going to keep discussing, but we'd invite you guys, if you have questions for us, anything about anything you saw, please come up to the microphones. There's two, one on each side. And here's how you get your book giveaways. How are we giving away the drone?
I mentioned my accent at the beginning of the session. The first one that can guess which country my company Seven Steps is from gets the drone. So just shout it out if you know.
Holland.
Denmark. No, this guy was first over here. You got it. It's Holland. Holland.
Does he work for your company? Okay.
Okay. First question.
Is this on? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if anybody has thoughts on what may be the next paradigm or killer app, so to speak, that would push this into the realm of mainstream world. I kind of think of how like HTML pushed computer networking into the mainstream, and everybody owns a computer now because HTML was the framework that allowed people to really get information universally. So do you have any thoughts on what that may be with Nui, with Surface, whatever, what may provide that push?
Yes, it's an interesting question. And the answer might be that we're already there. So I think that, you know, if you think about NUI as a way of building interfaces, is there anything stopping someone building a web NUI? I don't think so. So potentially all the tools are there, all the devices are there, all the pieces are falling into place. It's really up to us as developers and designers and engineers and experimenters and scientists to come up with those solutions now.
I would just answer your question with three main things that I'm personally invested in, which is GPU, sensors, and vision algorithms. Those three are starting to change the market right now. It's the beginning of it. So personally, that's my recommendation. When former students or whatever ask me, I say look into GPU processing, look into sensors, and look into vision algorithms.
Let's take another question.
My first question is, how far away do you think we are from being able to do like sign language to translation with machines? I mean, as far as communication and gestures go, that's the most, it's a very expressive gesture, being able to, you know.
So sign language is a hot topic, and yeah. I'm probably a good one to talk about that, some of the things that I had showed. I don't have the demo prepped here, but I've been working on specific hand pose recognition, be able to identify the specific parts of the fingers. And I've actually implemented part of the Xbox Kinect skeleton algorithm that published a paper. So I applied that to hands. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm not saying I'm the one that's going to figure it out. Lots of people are working on that problem. I think it's very close. And I think the catalyst for some of those kind of changes is the fact that suddenly anyone can go into a store, buy a $150 device, and then create things that were limited to you know, tens and hundreds of thousands of dollar budget devices only a couple years ago.
And might be better for follow-up after the session, but I was sort of wondering where the line is between doing the image analysis with heuristics versus machine learning to learn the series of gestures. Like the benefits of one approach versus the other.
As a quick pushback to you, why are you assuming a vision system? I mean, right, because if you use the glove, sensors are getting smaller. If you people put gloves with portable speakers, that might be a transitional step, right? So a lot of this question of when these things are going to happen, mm-hmm. it falls back on us. It's like, when are we going to build them, right? When are we as the hackers? Because the pieces are there, and I think that's the big point. We have this workbench full of all these pieces. The paradigm shift has to start with us first in terms of how we think about problem solving. But great, great question.
Well, just one more. Mark Miller of DevExpress, he is here around somewhere in this building. He built a library for detecting finger positions on the Kinect. And he's using it to showcase programming in Visual Studio using only Kinect, not a keyboard, which is pretty impressive. So we're getting there pretty soon. faster than you think, I think.
Question.
Since we're at a Microsoft conference, I thought I'd ask it. We're supposed to be able to buy the Surface later this year, correct? That's when the Samsung version comes out?
Yes.
So one thing I always thought was really important in NUI is fluidity of motion. That's one thing that hit me like a ton of bricks when I got my first iPad. Was that it tracked my motion perfectly, and it was perfectly fluid. And I noticed when you're doing your demo that you actually had to retry your movement several times because it actually staggered the motion with the movement of your finger. And I was curious if Microsoft has worked this out, if they're going to provide us the same fluidity of motion that we have in our iPad with the Surface.
So, Luis.
I'll answer your question. So, once again, what we showed you was a prototype. Some of you were not in my presentation before. And before I said, okay, so we have a Surface unit here, I kind of put a caveat there. And I said, you know, I brought you an unbaked cake. This is not a production build. It's not completed. You can think of the experience you had with Surface B1, which was very fluid, and that's what you're going to get with Surface B2 as well. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Josh. Hey, everybody. So I just have a thought and a question for you guys. The thought is that we think about touch and we think about a pinch zoom gesture, whether in the air with Kinect or on a multi-touch display as a natural thing, but it's actually not natural in my opinion. You know, in the real world, you don't zoom the map this way. On the paper map, right? So it's not natural. It's just we've been trained to believe that because of the success of the iPhone, I have to say. But the other thing that I didn't hear about, which is that I think the most natural interaction is speech. So speech recognition. You can do this kind of thing with the map, but zoom in would be probably more appropriate. So
do you zoom in, enhance.
Zoom in, enhance. Yes,
I think there's a couple of points there that you're making. The first one is that you make about natural, and Lewis made this point in his session before, which is that one of the most natural things we do as humans is learn, and so giving us the ability to learn things quickly gives us the ability to create what we call walk-up and use interfaces. So interfaces that, after touching it twice, it's very obvious what you have to do. So I think the natural aspect of it is really the ability to use the most important computer that we have to interact in a clean way with the interfaces.
Let's take two more questions.
Okay. To an extent, the NUI interfaces we have now require a lot of motion. With people who are paralyzed or unable to use their digits, what kind of NUI interfaces can we apply to them?
So a couple years ago, like 2 years ago at MIX, I was showing some work with the emotive headset that was at the time was in beta. It's come out in market. We're moving in that area too. That's a great question to the point of we think very vision and touch because those are our big senses, but there are many aspects of the community who don't have that. So there are those new aspects as well where you're putting on the 16 point and it's giving these feedbacks to your cognitive functions, to your emotional functions, and it's creating these feedback loops. But that's a great, even controlling through your facial muscles if you have access to that. But Andres's point of voice, right? We have people moving on thought control, thought recognition as well. All of these constitute NUI. It's such a wide world. Andres's point of pinch and zoom is kind of the cliche. Just like before that with Flash, it was drag, slide, flick, right? That was early 2000s. And now it's all pinch, zoom, you know, and spin these past couple years. And we're getting to an area that the gestures are moving up the arm now with Kinect, with gestural shoulder sweeps and wind. But that's still very biased toward mainly eyes and fingers, and natural is a much broader word than that. I also, great question.
Last question.
So now I have a lot of pressure because I'm the last person to ask a question. So one thing that's always appeared to me in when we're talking about natural user interfaces is the magic component of it. And what was really interesting hearing you talk, Rick, you talked about your father, right, playing with the Kinect. What I noticed bringing a Kinect into my household was I was like, this is magic. And my 7-year-old was like, this is ridiculous. Look at you flying around. Give me the controller. Because to children, there's no magic in this because it's their world. You know, I'm sitting there going, wait, this isn't my Atari. This is magic. What is the future of Nui when magic is just expected?
I think it's the future of technology, really, isn't it? I mean, every piece of technology that we use every day, we don't often think about as technology. I mean, think about, you know, what I'm holding in my hand here. It's a retractable pencil. But, you know, no one goes, oh, I need to use a piece of writing technology that has retractable lead. They say, no, I'm going to use a pencil. It's just become ubiquitous to our everyday lives. And I think that's what happens with technology. In fact, most people don't talk about their pocket PC anymore, do they? They talk about their phone, right? And yet your phone really is, probably everyone in this room has a smartphone, or 90% of the people in this room have a smartphone of some kind. It is a pocket PC.
But to that point, and to both, I disagree. I'm just kidding. No. To that point, 2 years ago, though, I'm not sure if I'd say natural. It's almost a case of future shock, right? Because Surface 1 came out in a pre-iPhone world. And when we first saw Surface 1, it was magical, right? And now, a year later, every soccer mom has a smartphone. You know, every soccer mom has multi-touch in her pocket, right? My mom has multi-touch in her pocket. And that was in 1 year. And then last year, a little over a year ago, we were making fun of the name iPad, you know, and all these jokes were coming out and it seemed ridiculous. And now, a year later, they're ubiquitous. I think we're suffering from a state of future shock. So defining magic in Nui is completely relative. But we need to be thinking about it. That is the challenge.
And I think it's always going to be moving forward. You know, so what we think is magical today is going to be commonplace tomorrow, and there's going to be some kind of new magic. So to wrap things up, I have a list of resources. So I have coupons with this written down. My book, you can get 40% off with this code, so you can come and get this. The Surface and tablet AR drone software, which is what Nicholas presented, that is open source and is available on CodePlex. The framework that I use to enable motion tracking with the Kinect for the application that I demonstrated at the end, Infostrat Motion Effects, that's also available on CodePlex. And if you're looking for Surface SDK, watch Surface.com and the Surface Twitter. I also wanted to point out that tonight, 7 to 9, we have a Nui mix-up. It's kind of a tweet-up kind of thing. And meet in the lobby in front of the Commons. And around 8 o'clock, we're going to go over for food and drink, sponsored by Frank Levine from the Public Sector Developer Evangelist. So thank you very much for coming. This was a great audience. Thank you very much.